It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Shri Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bond, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys. Hello and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm PVSB, and when I'm not co-hosting this podcast, along with my partners, I work at Flywheel, the newest division of Omnicom that helps enterprise brands improve their SEO and SEM, growing their e-commerce businesses. Today's episode was recorded earlier this year at the Food Marketing Institute's Midwinter Executive Conference in Marco Island, Florida. We hope you enjoy the conversation.
Hey, this is PVSB with the CPG Guys. I am down in Marco Island, Florida for the annual FMI Midwinter Executive Conference. And I am very fortunate to be speaking with one of the team members at FMI. It's Doug Baker. He's Vice President of Industry Relations. Doug, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
What a great venue. So many senior-level executives meeting to connect, build their plans for the year, and a great venue to do that at.
Well, and it doesn't hurt that you got the Gulf of Mexico out your view here of your makeshift office.
So yeah, nice. Someone said to me the other day it was a little overcast like it is today. I'm like, listen, it was 10 degrees when I left Connecticut yesterday. Yeah. I have no complaints.
Yeah, no kidding. This is a great venue. And we're happy to have everybody here. We had record attendance this year. So a lot of people getting out and getting engaged. So it's always great.
Why don't you, before we get into asking you about your area of expertise, maybe more generally, you'd like to just share with our audience, what exactly is this event all about?
Yeah, so Midwinter Executive Conference, number one, it's where our FMI board meets on an annual basis. So we hold our board meeting here, but it's also an opportunity for us to bring the executive leadership of the industry together. And that retail, wholesale, product manufacturers, solution providers, you know, anybody that supports the industry, we bring that executive level person to the Midwinter Conference to really sit down and one, have an opportunity to continue to educate and make them aware of leading trends and issues. Two is to meet, there's several councils that meet while we're here to work on those issues and opportunities. But then there's also this opportunity with our strategic executive exchange program and our technology exchange program where trading partners can sit down and actually talk about their strategies. What are they working on for 24? What are they working on for 25 and 26, right? So very high level. Strategic discussions.
So when you talked about this technology exchange conversation, at a higher level, what is FMI's mission and how does that play into the overall mission of the organization?
Yeah, so our three pillars are collaborate, educate, and advocate.
Okay.
Right? So we put everything into those three buckets. Mm-hmm. And from a technology standpoint, our members are focused on day-to-day activities, right? Unfortunately, sometimes it's the tyranny of the present. And so
sure.
They look to FMI to help them look up and out. What are the trends that are coming down the pike? I always call them the what-ifs, right? Mm-hmm. So what if something happens either from a regulatory standpoint, from a business trend standpoint, from a technology innovation standpoint that might change the way we do business? Okay. It might change our operating model or it might change the way the customer engages with us. We need help understanding that as quickly as possible and then let us work together to talk about ways to address that.
Okay. So when I think about technology, I go back 2 years and the buzzwords were metaverse and non-fungible tokens or NFTs. And then about this time last year, you started hearing the term generative AI or more generally artificial intelligence. What are you hearing are the big trends that the people, the participants here, both the retailers and the brands are really focused on from a technology perspective to enable them to do their business?
Yeah, there's some foundational work that the industry is working on. And a lot of that's being done and has been done, but now it's being done with the auspices of I need to start in implementing artificial intelligence into the activity, right?
Right.
So that foundational data, how am I setting with it? Does it need to be unified? Does it not need to be unified? There's a huge debate as to how clean the data actually has to be or not. And I think from a data standpoint, we should be always focused on having the cleanest data, the most complete data we can, because the consumer deserves that from us.
And it's not that the industry hasn't been leveraging AI for years. I mean, we try to differentiate between generative AI, which is this idea that we can create wholly new content, versus AI, which is more about machine learning and just finding a way to automate dull, dreary, repetitive tasks that a machine can do much faster so that humans can be freed up to do more creative, more higher level thinking. Is that kind of how you see AI being applied in this industry?
So I put it into two buckets.
Okay.
Right? So process automation.
Yeah.
Right? To your point,
right.
What are those processes that we're doing that are redundant, mm-hmm. that can be automated mm-hmm. in order to be able to take our human workforce and have them focused on something else?
Right.
The second one is around consumer engagement.
Yeah.
How can I further engage the consumer and delight them while they're in my environment? And when I say...
So one is about operating kind of the back of the house. Yeah. And the other one is, okay, now that I've got that operating, it's engaging the consumer so that they have a very frictionless and enjoyable experience.
Totally. And if you think about it, that's really been the retailer's business in general. And I want to operate more efficiently and however I can, and I want to make sure I take care of my end user, my consumer, my customer.
Okay.
And so now we're doing it, and it's just being enabled and grounded in technology through the use of artificial intelligence, through the use of generative AI. And then what's next? General AI is coming next. So how will that then further drive this?
So I saw a lot, I was out at CES last week, and I saw a lot of applications. One of the marketplace showed their shopping cart with the capability to now deliver targeted advertising. I saw just a whole host of applications. How far are we away from really seeing that come to life in physical stores in a scaled way? Like, I see there are a handful of stores that have these smart carts that can do things, but I wouldn't say it's wholly pervasive. Do you feel like we're at a tipping point where we're going to see a lot of these technologies adopted in a mass way out at retail to engage, or are we still a couple years away?
I think we're still a couple years away, personally. There are a lot of pilots going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with technology and those pilots, you unearth things that you might not have originally understood about that specific technology. You know, so smart carts are going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
But even they have some inherent challenges. The size of the basket's a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
Right? So it's the computer's sphere of view. Sometimes if I'm going and I'm doing my stock up shop,
right,
I'm loading that cart up. Now is that cart as functional as it would be if I was just using it?
And what happens when I'm walking out and all of a sudden the technician says, no, you can't actually take that cart out of the store. You have to move all your product into another cart. And that's a moment of friction. Does it make sense? Like, I think about all these investments, and it to some degree requires the retailer or the marketplace to make serious capital investments. And isn't it to some degree wiser that the capital investment is made by a consumer who just carries around this smartphone, and it's better to make the experience there so that it's more broadly and almost immediately available?
It is, but now you have a new challenge.
Okay.
Right? I have to educate that consumer on how to use it. Right? Now, if I have a physical technology in my store, there's a learning curve. Right?
Okay.
But I'm going in and I'm focused on that.
Yeah.
If I'm going to ask them to use their phone,
you're right.
How do I message that to them? How do I give them that opportunity to learn? So is it mean that I've got to have more people in the store to be able to walk them through it? Does it mean I have to use my loyalty app to send them a video to how to use it? Right. So there's some.
Do I have to make it as user friendly as possible so it's virtually impossible not to intuitively understand, which is a lofty goal, but not typically practiced?
Absolutely. And you think about, you know, we have a large percentage of the population, I think it's well over 90% now, that's got a handheld device,
right?
That's got a smartphone.
Right.
But to what level of comfort do they have with that smartphone?
Right.
Right. So now if you can do basic activities like scanning a QR code, that's relatively easy to teach.
Yeah.
But if you're going to ask me to scan a QR code to then use my phone to act as my register, there's some you know, complications of that. It's never going to be non-used.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I, you know, the debate about self-checkout, you know, is it going to go away? Is it going to stay? Self-checkouts aren't going away ever,
no.
Right? Neither will scan and go. And if you look at a retailer's grocery store, they have 45,000 plus items in it for a reason. They want to give the customer choice while they're with them.
Right.
And that includes how they check out, right? So
to that end, when we think about this as a device for consumers to be able to engage, like, one of the reasons I love shopping online is because I can learn a lot about products online. I have product detail pages. They have photos. They have videos on how to use it. They have a copy that tells me, is this item fair trade, non-GMO, whatever lifestyle I'm trying to live. And then they also have social proof, which is product ratings and reviews. How far away do you think we are from, you know, the vast majority of retailers being able to find a way, whether it's by scanning the barcode on the shelf tag or a QR code or just being able to bring all of that knowledge and information to the physical store where still 90% of sales are occurring, that will rival the kind of experience that I get online that I feel comfortable in, that this is the product for me. I mean, where are we in that process?
I love that line of discussion, because it's a conversation we're having right now.
Yeah.
We've launched two new committees, a Retail Wholesale Digital Commerce Committee and a CPG Digital Commerce Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about seamless interaction, seamless experience for the consumer.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's going to take strong data sharing and data trading partner collaboration in order for that to happen. So, you know.
So you need plumbing. You need plumbing to get content from brand. You basically need the digital plumbing to get the content from the brand source to then display at the retail experience. And then the question becomes is it the same content for every retailer? Does each retailer have an opportunity to tailor and present the content the way that they believe their customers, like how a natural food retailer wants to present a product may well be fundamentally different than a mainstream grocer does.
Yeah.
So all of that comes into play.
Yeah. So now you're saying seamless experience that's personalized to me specifically,
yes,
or my format specifically.
Is my hope like audacious and unrealistic, or are we moving in that direction?
I think we're totally moving in that direction. And I don't think it's as far off as where we think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's going to be some of the leading movers, and there's going to be some folks that are going to allow them to take the arrows in the back, and then they'll follow along, and that's great. That's always good. Those that have the resources and available to them, go ahead and create that.
What do you do for the ones that don't? Like, so obviously the big players that we're familiar with, the big retailers, have that capability. The super regional, the regionals, and the very local ones.
Yeah.
Can they benefit from this? And how is FMI in these technology exchanges trying to facilitate a, for lack of a better term, a ubiquitous distribution of these capabilities so that all can benefit?
Yeah, so for FMI to be involved, for us, it's around how do we create industry standard?
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So because, you know, we're an association, we're solution provider agnostic.
Okay.
But we want to make sure that the industry can take advantage of whatever is created.
Right.
So how can we create consistency and standardized nomenclature, definitions, interoperability of information sharing? Mm-hmm. And then what we encourage our members to do, and especially if they're smaller independents that might not be self-distributing, is use the power of your wholesaler. Right.
Yeah.
So they are aggregating a significant number of retailers within their wholesale environment.
Right.
Utilize that platform. Or if you are part of a buying group like Topco, utilize that platform in order to be able to take advantage and have that solution provider that you choose come in and actually build that model for you.
I love that. The challenge I always see in doing that is when you're working through a wholesale and you've got independent retailers. You may have 100 independent retailers, and each of them may have their own POS system and their own customer data platform. And it's building those standards can be very challenging. And I think it's a great objective. I personally think we're still a bit far away from being able to do that, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't be focused on doing it.
Totally. You got to, because you know that's where the industry's going, right? So if technology innovation is at one trajectory and the retail industry is relatively linear going, just, you know, we've got to start closing that gap. And so that's how you get that accomplished.
So with the exchange that's going on here this week, are there any topics in particular that you're focused on to move the industry along at this very moment?
Well, get ready to stamp your buzzword bingo card.
Oh, here we go.
Because we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at artificial intelligence. We're going to be peeling the onion back on it. How does it better create consumer engagement and loyalty?
Okay.
How does it take waste out of the supply chain and drive food and sustainability?
Okay.
So we're going to be looking at AI from various different ways. And then we also have a technology pitch competition that's, we got three finalists that are here. They're going to be pitching to the audience and, you know, utilizing artificial intelligence and their apps in order, their customer facing apps in order to make their shop easier. But you had mentioned, you know, bringing the online environment into the store.
Yeah.
Think about augmented reality. Right. Mm-hmm. And so one of the pitching companies is in that area of augmented reality. And, you know, we now have glasses that are starting to come back out. I want to say that the Apple glasses are like
the Google glasses from a couple of years ago.
Right. But now Apple's in it. I think they're like $300. Yep. So at what point? And they look just like the glasses that you and I wear. Right. Yeah. They're not these big honking things. They use the processing power of your phone. So imagine walking into a grocery store and you're immediately connected to a platform
for me to be able to just find the products that I create my shopping list before I walk in. And it not only tells me where the products are, but it takes me in the most efficient route to go get those products. If that's what glasses will do for me in the future, give me a bifocal pair because I want them now.
But there's a little bit of work that's got to be done in order to be able to do that, right? So every
you got to map the store.
You've got to have a digital twin.
Right.
Your data's got to be clean,
right?
So you can actually execute.
And that you mentioned the data point. That's not a small undertaking.
It is not.
It's like how the sausage is made. That is a key example of where if you don't have clean data to begin with, you can't do all these other wonderful things that you want to do. You've got to have very clean, up-to-date data about the products, about where they are in the store, about all those things in order. And then the customers who are going to connect their glasses to them, their shopping list, and then to the store. There's a lot that goes on.
There is a ton that goes on. And, you know, you can do it without clean data. You might not be as successful. Right?
Yeah.
Somebody that has a little bit better data than you. So.
And I've got to imagine that in my talking to a lot of the CPG brands that are here, they're going to gravitate to the partners that have the cleanest data because they know they can be most efficient in the work they do. So there's a benefit to strategic collaboration.
And I appreciate you bringing that up, too, because that is going to take a collaborative effort, right? Because the CPG brands, they have the data. It is the cleanest in their house.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to get to the retailer consistently. And right now, retailers are pulling data from multiple different solutions in order to be able to piece that together to be able to run their digital environments. But sometimes it's secondary information. Right.
Sure.
So there's got to be a better solution that the industry comes up that shares that data more seamlessly, that's more real time.
And then you come into the fact that there is no single version of the truth of the data on the manufacturer side, because what they send to retailer A and the requirements for what they need are in many cases fundamentally different than how the data is structured at retailer B. And so they have to have a deep knowledge or work with some kind of a syndicator of content that has that understanding of who are all the players, how do you modify, adjust the data so that retailer A gets exactly what they want, retailer B gets what they want, and so on and so forth, so that at the end of the day, the customer shopping in each of those retailers is getting the experience that they expect from that specific retailer.
Well, and if you think about it too, if you can utilize technology to make that transition a little bit more fluid, as long as you can standardize nomenclature, definitions, KPIs, whatever those data points are around it, and then the technology can actually mold that information in, you know, we should be able to accomplish that.
That may not be the most glamorous part of the industry, but it's necessary.
Think about all the things it unlocks.
Yeah,
right?
That's where
the sexy comes.
Exactly.
Right?
I like that. That's great. Well, what have you got planned for the rest of your week here, and what are you hoping everybody gets out of this as they leave Marco Island? What would you consider to be a productive win for all the players involved as it relates to technology?
Well, you know, I mean, first and foremost is connections, mm-hmm. right? That's what these events do. They bring people together.
So yeah, sure.
Everybody connects with those individuals that they were hoping to connect with.
Okay.
In order to be able to more proactively grow their business. I think if everybody walks away and we ask our attendees, what's the number one reason you come here? And that's it.
Yeah.
We want to connect.
Right.
So that, and we, you know, there's a couple of years we didn't do much of that. So, you know, we're doing a lot of that. Understanding the trends that are either on top of us or in the near 2 to 3 year future that are coming at us.
Okay.
And have a better understanding of what that means.
Okay.
So that they can implement them into their own operating model.
Yeah.
That's really important as well.
Okay.
So, and then, you know, bringing new companies, right?
Yeah.
We have several new companies that have never been to Midwinter.
Yep.
They're here for the very first time.
My first Midwinter. Here we are.
Awesome. It's often the happiest because sometimes I feel like this conference is the best kept secret in the industry. And we're pretty proud of it.
Yeah.
So when we are able to get people here and they actually experience it and see the value of the attendance that's here, even though it's not a significant 1400 is a lot, but it's not huge, but it's a very unique audience.
I've been to big conferences in Las Vegas with 10 or 15,000. I don't get to see anybody.
Yeah.
And there are so many people I want to connect, and I've been here less than 24 hours and I have run into, I had my, to just like I had my bingo buzzword checklist, I had already pre-gamed the list of attendees and the people I know, and I've seen a good chunk of them already. So this seems to be, while 1400, still very intimate.
Totally. And that's the value of this event. It's creating environments and activities that people can just connect and talk about business, talk about families, talk about life, and, you know, enjoy the industry that we're in.
Okay. Doug, thanks for taking time out of the conference to speak with us today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.